Welcome back to Totally Unrelated, guys. I'm your host, Adrian Cosby, and boy, am I excited to be here. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for all of the feedback in the last couple of episodes. I don't know if you noticed, but we did two episodes last week. A lot of these podcasters out here are struggling to get one off every couple weeks. Here, we're gonna do two. Why? Because every time I do a podcast, I think of about 500 things that I wish I had talked about instead of what I actually did talk about. The second podcast just fills that time easier. So, thank you for tuning in. We had a banner week last week, a lot of downloads, and I'm very happy that you enjoyed it. So, let's keep it moving right along. I had an interesting week last week. I was off. I wasn't doing any touring. I wasn't doing any shows. I don't think I did a set at all last week, which is a first, to be honest. I think that's the longest I've gone in a long time without doing a set, and it felt kind of crazy. And it showed last night when I did do a set. For the first time, rusty, not even rusty, just windy, clunky, not all there, but gave me something to focus on. Definitely something to focus on because I'll be closing out the Wiley's Comedy Joint Sunday show this week, which was the first place I ever performed comedy in a club, was Wiley's. And it was just an open mic on a Sunday, just like this. But I'll be closing out the show, so it's always fun there. I heard this last Sunday was pretty wild, and it's one of those shows that even professionals drop in and do the show because it's one of the best crowds you're going to get anywhere in Dayton on a Sunday. Saw Thursday at the last Thursday at the Columbus Funny Bone. I saw a showcase, some people auditioning for feature work. And that was fun to watch these people go through the emotional roller coaster that is the audition process. It's kind of like it's not like a cattle call, it's just four comics, but it's you're definitely going to get some feedback. And it was a good crowd, and everybody was funny, and it was good. But one of those gentlemen that was in this showcase is going to be today's guest. Ramon Garcia is going to be today's guest, and I'll air that at the end. Had to go through a lot of editing hoops for this one. We did it over Skype or a Skype-like program. It's actually called Zoom, and it worked out very well. That way, he and I could talk face to face, but we recorded with our phones, and then I merged those files in post-production. So it was an interesting exercise. But there's a chirp going on that I was able to edit out manually, going through and just rubbing it out of the audio. But when he's talking, it's in there. So. It's not too terrible. Hopefully, it's not a deal breaker for you guys. He's a very interesting fellow, and I enjoyed talking to him. And I'm going to be going to Florida here soon, so hopefully, I'll get to meet up with him again, and we can sit down and do it in person. But I enjoyed our conversation. I enjoyed his set. I enjoyed all the sets. And on Thursday, I have another interview with another special guest from the sh that I met at the showcase on Thursday at the Columbus Funny Bone. I've been doing a lot of walking, guys. I'm trying to get rid of this spare tire that I have around the middle of my waist. I realized I took my son to the pool the other day and I didn't want to take off my shirt. And that's how I know my body dysmorphia is in full swing. And I mean, I know it's a dysmorphic mentality that I have, not because I feel like I'm so fat, but it is one of those things where it affects my. It affects my motivation. It also affects my happiness. So I've been walking, been eating right, been doing T25, Focus T25. If you're a fan of Sean T, who is the guy you see on TV right now doing the size, the dancing, the thing that teaches people to think that they can dance to lose weight. And I'm not saying that you can't, that you're not going to lose weight if you dance. What I'm saying is that you're not going to learn to dance by doing this. However, doing the T25, the motions are similar progressions, and I'm very uncoordinated. But I found that doing it by the second time, I was able to get the hang of it a lot better. Sean T, thank you. Beachbody Productions, thank you. Might be joining them as a sponsor to the show, depending on if I can walk after doing this third disc today. And I'm heading over to the Columbus Funny Bone to talk some biz biz. It's only about a mile and a half from my house, so I can walk over there and back, and it's a good brisk calorie burn. I usually walk the long way to make it a full 4 miles, because that's what the hells I do. Guys, I don't know if you're a MyFitnessPal user, you probably already know this. If you're not, you probably don't know this, but the hotline is up and running and we're already taking messages. The totally unrelated hotline, you can call, leave a message, you can give a shout out to somebody, you can give a shout out to me. You can say you love the show, you can say you hate the show. I'll play everything. As long as it's not, as long as we can understand what you're saying, it's going on. It could be in a different language. I'll play it. You ready for the number, guys? You got something to write with? Are you gonna voice dictate this? Siri, copy this number. 336-422-6729. You see what I did there? Okay, Google, save this number. 336-422-6729. Did that work for you? Did your phone flip over and record the number for you? If not, your phone's a piece of crap. If it did, you probably need to change your security settings, let's be honest. It probably shouldn't be able to do that to your phone. But anyway, call the hotline, please. And the number is 336-422-6729. I don't know if you guys know how to do it or not, but somehow, somewhere in those numbers is my last name. It's like For Cosby or something like that. I don't know what it is, but leave a message. It'll ring 3 or 4 times, and then a voicemail will pick up. Nobody will ever answer that phone. You don't have to worry about somebody going, hello, who is this? If somebody does do that, then it's probably the wrong number. Now, we will use this line at a later date, probably for call-ins. I want to do some live call-in stuff, but that's not what it's being used for now. Now it's just a hotline for you to leave messages, and we'll play those on the air in their entirety. And might even get some special guests to call in from time to time. So, please humor me. Let's make this show about us. Let's have an interactive podcast. I don't even really want to call it a podcast anymore. I feel like it's a show. I feel like it's just like it's a real thing. Getting the feedbacks from the peoples. And, you know, it's nice to see the listenership come back when I did the double episode week because I was afraid I was going to split my listeners. But I think what happened is that some of you tuned in for Tuesday, some of you tuned in for Thursday, and some of you tuned in for both. And I think that worked for everybody. It worked for me. And I actually struggled not releasing a third podcast on Friday. And what I wish I had done is recorded it and maybe not released it right away. But the more I do this, the more it comes to me as like, hey, you know, I think I want to do that. I think I want to get a record in. That being said, I'm sore as fuck. This T25 is kicking my ass. I haven't worked out in 3 months. And it's all kind of body weight exercises, lower body mostly. It was the first discus cardio, and it's kicking my ass. Let's just be honest. So that's what I'm up to today. I'm going to play this interview that I did with Ramon Garcia. And he talks about Florida, talks about his dad. You know, it's in-depth for how quick of an interview it is, and it's still about 40 minutes. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you get out to come and see some shows. I'm going to be at the Wiley's in Dayton this Sunday, the first week of June, capping off. I guess it's Sunday the 12th. Is that it? Yeah. And then that following week, got nothing. Sorry. But the week after that, 17th through the 19th, I'll be at the Liberty Funny Bone. So come out there and see me with my good friend Rob Schneider. And that's Friday and Saturday. And then on Sunday, I'll be with Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live as well. So you can't miss. It's going to be a great show that week. Week after that, June 23rd through the 26th, the Tampa Improv in Florida. The week after that, the 30th through July 3rd, I'll be at Richmond, Virginia, visiting with my good friend Chris Allen. So expect a podcast with him while we're out there. I think that's it for dates that I'm going to give right now. It's about to start a 7-week tour where every single week is filled. So that's going to be nerve-wracking. But if you can, make it to Wiley's this Sunday if you're in the Dayton area or Middletown, Cincinnati, Yellow Springs area. Come out, see some live comedy, support these guys before they're funny. Okay, without further ado, I think I'm going to go right into this interview. What's great about doing these interviews with people is that I can say things to people in the podcast that I can't say in real life. And I realize that's probably the whole reason I like having a podcast or being a podcast host is that I can meet people in public and be like, hey, I'd like to ask you some really inappropriate personal questions, but it's going to seem weird unless we record it and I share it with my friends. And that always seems to get them to agree to it. But if I just walked up and said, hey, tell me about your dad, I heard he died, I don't think they'd be as receptive. So it's great. I'm loving the life as a podcaster, loving the life as a comedian. I'm loving my life in general. And I think it's my endorphins are up from working out, from all this walking. And you know what? I thought I wasn't going to enjoy walking because I like running so much. But walking is just like running, except it hurts less. It just takes twice as long to burn the same amount of calories. I guess I need to slow down, not be in such a rush. Is anybody out there into transcendental meditation? Because I'm looking for some guidance. Send me a message. Leave me something on the hotline. Let me know what you know. Share what you know. Ask questions. You know me. All right, guys. It's getting weird. We're out in the weeds. We're going to 86 this portion of the show because the restaurant lingo is creeping in, and that's how I know it is about to be a $1,000 hour. I love you guys. Take care. Stay unrelated. Listen to Ramon Garcia and come see a live comedy show. Check out my website. The store is open. Buy a t-shirt. Get on eBay. I'm Puma_Elite. I'm selling all my old jeans. Some of these jeans are brand new. I've only been worn once. Is there anything else? Snapchat, just because on Snapchat. Check me out. Instagram at Cosby Comedy. I feel like you already know this. You should, if you're listening to this at all, you probably already know this and you're following me, but let's get together. I want to hear from you guys. I love you. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of the show. Okay, welcome, guys. Welcome to Totally Unrelated. I have a special guest coming to us all the way from Florida today. We got Ramon Garcia, who I met at the Columbus Funny Bone last week. Did the closing set at the showcase on Thursday night. Absolutely crushed it. And I knew I wanted to have him on the show after that. We talked at the bar. We had a special moment that comics have sometimes when you see somebody enjoying the fruits of the labor, and I was off that day. You know what I mean? It's almost like if you saw somebody that had a job as a firefighter drinking at the end of the day, and you're a firefighter and you're off that day, but you know he just had one hell of a day. You kind of bond through that camaraderie. Maybe soldiers have that same thing. What do you think, Ramon? Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, Adrian? What's good, man? Thanks for having me. Yeah, man, it was a really great moment, man. It was really cool that you even noticed it. You know, some people would have thought, oh, he's just sitting over there sad looking and doing his thing. But, yeah, it was one of those special moments that, you only get from working your ass off this long. I've been at it 11 years and, I've had some accomplishments, but something like this is, you know, it's not the end of the road, but it's just like we were talking about, you know, a turning point in your journey. So, it was cool that you even noticed it and brought it up and was able to share that, because that's how I was feeling that day. I was just calling people up like, yo, good news, you know, I'm approved, good to go, you know. So it's one of those things that, you know, you just want to enjoy for that moment, even though I don't have a date yet or whatever, but it's just enjoying that fruit of that, like you said, that labor that I've put in.
Absolutely. It's a validation, actually, because there's so, I always say comedy's a thankless job. Which is the most ridiculous thing you could say, because if you're performing comedy and it's going well, they're laughing and that's your thanks. But it's thankless in that all the thanks comes from the bottom. You know what I mean? It's rare that you get some thanks from the top down to where you are. The audience, not to say that the audience is below you, but the audience can't really help you. You know what I mean? But when somebody that can help you is like, yeah, I see what you did with that. That's going to work for us. We'd like to give you some opportunities. It's like, oh, I'm not crazy. You know, I'm not chasing this pipe dream or whatever. Somebody else does see this in me as well, whatever. So what was funny is that, like, my situation, when I had my audition showcase, it was, like, I didn't pass. I didn't get passed that time. I was with some of my best friends in comedy that I had started with. I think most of them had started before me, but we were neck and neck. We were in the same contest. We went to the same shows. We drove together. I mean, we were good friends. And it was about 11 of us. That's probably the biggest thing that was different. And we only did about 10 minutes each. But it was one of those things where it was like, I didn't get past, and in a way I knew I didn't deserve it at the time, but I also hadn't been seeking it. I was recommended by somebody to go do the showcase, and then they let me in. So it was almost like, at that point I realized, this is the danger of what can happen when you get an opportunity before you're ready. So then I get that opportunity, then every day after that becomes, make sure this next time this opportunity comes, you're more than ready. You know what I mean? And that's what I saw in you, was a guy who was like, oh, this is what it looks like when you show up to the game ready. Because there was nothing, there was one of the guys that went that night had just seemed like he was a comic, but maybe didn't understand how, you know what I mean? You went up there and did a feature set. You know what I mean? Or a headlining set even. But some people got up there and they just didn't get the rhythm of the show or whatever. But you were just like... Like, how long had you been practicing that set? Were you in your head all day? What was going on?
Well, this week up until then, like, I didn't get any work this last weekend. So I said for sure I got to hit up open mics every single night. So the audition was on Thursday. So I said Monday, Tuesday, and if I can Wednesday, depending on the flight that I got, I said I'm going to get on stage. And I got on stage because I teach a comedy class on Monday at the Palm Beach Improv. So I got up on there. I usually just let them do their thing, but I was like, hey, let me do one of my bits. I did a little set there. And then that same night, I went to a place called Black Rose in Del Rey. Did that. Did a great, like, did like 10 minutes. Worked some new stuff, but kind of touched up on the older stuff too, just to kind of make sure it's fresh, because I always got to keep it fresh. And then Tuesday, I did another room called Dada's in Del Rey, another one. Really, it's another one of the local favorites. Another 10-minute set, just going off the cuff a little bit more improv that day, just keeping it fresh, but again, just vibing with the audience, getting everything fresh, the energy. Wednesday, I did, was going to do the Funky Buddha, but I was getting a little too late for that one, so I ended up doing a place called Honey, you know, again, in Del Rey. I was in Del Rey, like, all week, but yeah, just Monday, Tuesday,
Wednesday. So you went up every single night?
Every single night, and just did a set, and didn't do, like, a full 15. I kind of had an idea. I was just condensing my regular feature set from 30 to 15 and just getting the big points, which usually include something with my dad and being from the beach joke at the end. And the beginning depends on, you know, how I'm feeling in the crowd. I kind of changed a couple things last minute, but kept it as clean as I could, but still keeping to myself, because that was one thing I didn't want to take out, was the funny part, because... You know, like, I'm not right. Dirty, but I'm like PG-13. It's a comedy club, so I want to show him who I am and not just try to corporate clean it up. Like, hey, I'm this guy when I'm, you know, I can do it, but that's not who I really am. So I think that was, and that sometimes that gets in my head when I'm trying to showcase. It's like forgetting who I am. So I just wanted to make sure that I showcase who I am, be comfortable with it. And then if he didn't approve me, at least I did me, you know, at least I could be good with that.
Right. Yeah. Sure, and I think that's how I felt about my audition, at least the first time, because it wasn't like the best set of the night, but it was a good set. It was one of the best sets of the night, and it was, and out of all the, I think it was actually 11 of us, and he only took one, and the one that he took, if I could have laid wages in Vegas, I would have put all my money on him anyway.
Yeah.
So it was like none of us stood out after this guy performed, and the funniest part about it is, he's like my best friend, so I can't even be mad for him, you know? Yeah. And then when my second opportunity came around, it wasn't even like an audition. It was just, I was in the club, got to MC for an afternoon show, and then me and my best friend, you know, went back in the office and just got our calendars filled. And that was like, you know, that was like, I didn't even know I was auditioning again. You know, I didn't even know he was going to be in the room to watch it or anything like that. But it was hugely satisfying. And also one of those things where it's like, the moment that you have that breakthrough where you're like, okay, now I'm in, but where does this go? It's almost like, even then he could call you next week and fill you up to New Year's or whatever. And then you'd be like, okay, but I still have 2017. You know what I mean? It's like you get so much in one sitting, and then you're like, I'm going to be hungry tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You never fill up. You're never full. It's never like, here's 10 years of work. You know, that never happens. So it's like one of those things where I feel like when you have that breakthrough moment, that's why I felt like it was important to talk to you about it at the time, was that could be the best feeling for a long time. Not to say that you're not going to have more accomplishments, but that is a really high point. And it's always up and down. That's an ebb and flow business that we're in. And even on some of your highest nights, you're like, yeah, but this isn't as good as it was a year ago. You know, or this was, you know, the last time I played this club, that was good, but I've had better. It's always comparing it to something that was less than or better all the time.
Yeah.
So how'd you get into, what brought you to the stage? What was your first thing that got you to like, man, I got to do this stand-up thing?
I'd have to say, I always tell this story to people is, I was in the military, and I was like, I had just an itch, and people who know me from high school days and even younger, you know, like, I was just a shy kid, so they don't even, they can see me, and they're like, wow, like, you're doing stand-up? Like, you were always the quietest one, how you know, but those are the people that really didn't know me, because my close friends, you know, the ones that you keep within that, you know, arm's distance, like, those... Like, they knew I was funny. Like, with them, I was comfortable. Right. I could come out. But this was something after, like, my father had passed away 3 days before my 18th birthday. And then that same year, I joined the military. So it was, like, a lot of stuff going on with me. And, a few years into it, you know, in the military, I was just, like, I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I felt like it wasn't for me. It wasn't waking me up in the morning. Like, I had to get up. I didn't get to get up. You know, it was, like, constant battling with that. And I just, for some reason, just started writing and kind of drawing towards comedy DVDs more and more. Like, I always enjoyed it. But I felt like, for some reason, I wanted to break stuff down and express myself, because I was always... Like, being from my father, he was from Puerto Rico, and he was so, so strict, and I wasn't never able to really express myself. It was always like, we go to somebody's house, you shake everybody's hand, you sit in the corner, you eat, you say thank you, and you leave, you shake everybody's hand again, and then we go. You know, it was very proper, very strict, so I was never able to express myself or be honest or do anything like that, so I just started, you know, having little, you know, writing sessions by myself. I had a roommate that he was a... He's a musician. He's actually got a band called Air Traffic Controller. He's in the Boston area. He's doing pretty well now. And I just, seeing him through his process kind of motivated me to kind of do my own thing. I was like, okay, he's writing songs. He's writing about his life, about his, you know, his girlfriend dumping him and all this stuff. And he's getting this stuff out. So I was like, you know what? Let me try this. And I started writing jokes, just, you know, writing stuff down, seeing what works. And, you know, because that was one of the things that drew me to it, was like, also, like, my dad, again, was like super strict, but the only time that we were ever able to connect was when we would watch Martin. We would watch Martin, and he would crack up. Like, Jerome would have him in tears, you know, just, you know, he'd come out doing his whole thing, we got roped in the house, and my dad would die cracking up, laughing, where it hurts his side, and we were able to laugh together, and that was how we connected a little more. But when we weren't laughing and watching comedy, it was like business, and he'd take me to work with him, and it was always like strict. So it was one of those things that it, you know, drew me to comedy, you know, because it was able to break walls down like that. You know, if I could break down a wall with that such a strict person, then, you know, who knows what it could do. And I got out of the military in 2004. I got on unemployment for about 6 months, and that unemployment started to run out. So I said, you know, I need a job. Let me see what I can do. I started working at the Improv, and I hit up an open mic one night, and it was about 6 months into it. I was 6 months on the unemployment, and about 3 months into that, I started recording myself. This was still, like, I still had, like, Hi8 and VHS type tapes and stuff. So I was recording myself in one of my rooms in my mom's house, and you know, I put a little music in the background so she didn't think I was crazy, because I'm, you know, obviously talking to myself like, yeah, my girlfriend's crazy, da, 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 you know. So I'm pretty much recording myself for 3 months straight and going over this 5-minute skit, you know. I'm thinking like, oh, this is, I don't know what stand-up is, but I'm gonna try it, I'm gonna try to memorize it, and my stomach is turning because I have never done anything like this, you know. I tried to do a speech class in the military and I froze. Literally, really? I was like shaking the podium, like, hey, how you guys doing? It was just horrible. I was sweating. I was like just stuttering. I had bold print. I forget how big the print was, like 36, just in case, you know, like, because if it's too small, I'm like, I can't read it. So I put it really big, like, yeah, how you guys doing? Yeah, it was horrible. So I had that on my mind, and I called up Renee Hart at the Improv here in South Florida, and she booked me for the Miami Improv. And I got over there, and she's like, I get there, and she's like, all right, you're going last. And I'm like, shit, I'm going last? Like, usually in my mind is like, oh, they saved the best for last, not knowing later. She's like, no, we put the shit towards the end because everybody leaves, so it's fine. So I was like, right, okay,
right,
whatever.
Right.
And
you also have to clean up after the patrons when you're done with your set, but you're going last. No, that's the spot. That's the sweet spot.
Now I know. It's like, right. Hey, that, it is the spot. But for then, you know, in her mind, she's like, no, whoever shows up, we just throw him in. Like, it's not no headliner, whatever. He's a new guy. Put him up the end, whatever. But right. I had 6 double rum and cokes.
Let me ask you this real quick. Did you bring people to the show?
No.
So you didn't have anybody that you knew there at all?
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right.
No. I was just going solo that day, and just one of those things you just have to do on your own. One of those mission things. I was like, you know what? I don't need any distractions, you know? Like, oh, where's the tickets at? Where's the ticket booth? Like, I don't want to... I don't have time for that. I'm nervous as hell. Like, I don't want to hear anybody. So I just drove out there. And I was shaking, like I never literally shook in my life like that, where I was so nervous to do something, you know. I just kept drinking. I had like 6 double rum and cokes, which they don't suggest to anybody, but it helped a little bit just to loosen me up. And by the time I would go at the end, like I get on stage, I did 4.5 minutes, and I still have the recording on tape. So I have a tape recorder. That's why. You know, trying to boost myself up. Like, I killed it. Went up there. Yeah. Everything hit. They loved it. Luckily, my last joke was about a drunk guy winning a contest in a Latino dance contest. So I was able to play that off really well. And I tell you, I did not sleep one wink. And I don't say it like, oh, you know, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I the whole day until the morning, I was just like, Ramon Garcia going on stage. Like the whole night. Into the morning, my mom was like, woke me up. She's like, you didn't fall asleep? Like, no, like, I can't. Like, the whole day until that night, that next night I had to perform in Boca Raton. I didn't sleep the whole night. So I was just wired. Of course, the alcohol, the adrenaline rush, because this is something I'd never done before, and I was just jacked up. And I did really, really well for a Miami crowd. I did really, really well. And then the next night, I go to Boca Raton, and I bomb so hard for 5 minutes, where it's just sweat and just crickets. And felt that like night, 50 I minutes. Slept like a baby. And I haven't thought of anything else since, so.
Interesting. So what, how long from, when was your next show after Boca Raton?
Back then, I can't even remember. I mean, after that, actually, it was probably somewhere in Lake Worth. There was a place called Ray's.
But how much time? Like months, weeks?
Within a few days, I'd say. I mean, I kept it going. You know, I was hooked at that point, and you know, I was just working. I didn't know what I was doing. Like a lot of us, just going out, trying stuff. You know, seeing what works, and it you know, people started to draw towards me because I was taking a lot of chances. What I think is a lot of guys don't do these days is take chances, or sometimes when we even I forget sometimes. You know, like you get to a certain level and you don't want to. you know, you want to have a good set every time. And he's like, no, you gotta always take chances and grow a little bit, and, you know, and see what happens. You know, if it doesn't, if it works, cool. If it doesn't, hey, you grow still within that lesson, you know?
For sure. So when you started, was there any local celebrities or celebrities in general that kind of took you under their wing, kind of pointed you in the right direction or gave you any advice? Or was it something that you kind of just did trial by fire to this point?
I'd say it takes a village, you know, and I give all love to all the comedians down here, that they all kind of gave me a little bit here and there. You know, starting from Renee Hart with the Improv. She took me pretty much under her wing. I became her assistant, and she actually gave me, within 2 weeks, I was actually where I worked at the box office. And she usually would hire comics, but then she would she would fire them because they're always asking for guest spots and just, you know, hounding her. And I made it a point not to do that. I never mentioned anything about the stage. I just did my job, clocked out, and left. And then she saw that I was organized. I could do Excel, you know, all this stuff from the military. And then she goes, you know, do you want to, you know, organize open mic for me and see if, you know, you can do this and just take the calls and set it up? And I was like, all right, cool. So I got the golden ticket, man. Within a month or two, I had the golden ticket, you know, the keys to the freaking Ferrari and mom's and dad's away. I had the Palm Beach Improv, I had the Fort Lauderdale Improv, the Miami Improv, all open mics, right? So setting everybody up. Of course, I'm going to get a guest spot. I do 5-10 minutes at any point I want to do. So I had that stage time. And then things got really good. I became her assistant, and I was working, you know, I had that setup where, you know, you pick a date and you can MC it. So I was hosting at all three clubs, and my schedule got so full at one point. All I had was Monday nights off and Saturday and Sunday during the day, because everything else I was either working 9 to 5 there or on stage Tuesday through Sunday.
Wow.
You know, so I got good really fast, and then you know, because stage time is where it's at. So when I had that, I mean, there was a lot of bumps in here, you know, in there, but the progression was always going up, you know.
I was talking with another comedian earlier today, and we were talking about how stage time is important, but it's not all created equal. And so I think that anytime you're in a Funny Bone or Improv stage, whether it's an open mic or even if it's a private show, it's a tougher audience than it is in a B room or a C room or a bar. Sometimes bars can be rough because people don't want the show to actually be happening, but I find you know what I'm saying, they're like, nah man, this ain't what I came here
watching
for.
The game, man.
Turn the game back on. I'll listen to the comedy, but you gotta turn the game on, and the screen is right by the microphone. So but I can imagine how that would have been basically you got, you said it's the golden ticket. What I would say is you got steroids at a very early age, because we all, you know, if you look at it from an athletic standpoint, comedy, I think you have people that do the basic amount of work and they build the basic amount of muscle to do the job at a basic level. Mm. But other people sometimes have even, you know, people that work in the public sector, say if you're a meter maid or all you do is write parking tickets all day, in a way you have steroids for comedy, because you're interacting with the craziest people at the craziest times of their life. It's if you don't use that for your act, even on a generic level, you're not helping yourself. So being in front of all those paid audiences, even at an MC level or at an open mic level, but to be able to also have some level of power in controlling how those shows go and who's on those shows and setting the lineup, it's almost like your awareness level grew in probably months what would take most comics years to experience.
Absolutely. Just fast forward through a lot of stuff that I had to grow on stage and off.
So do you do, up until now, have you done most of your work in the Florida, in that lower Florida area?
Mostly. I mean, I've dabbled some in Central Florida, North Florida, West Coast. I really wanted to do that just took it as like a thing just to make sure that home was taken care of. Like I knew everything about every club and tried to do every club I could get into, you know? And then just, and plus it's hard to travel in the beginning. So I would only travel when I could, you know, I could take a hit and not, it's hard, but now you got the merch and then you can start dabbling a little bit. Now I know that you need to do the merch and it helps because.
What do you have? You know, what do you got?
What I got a selling? T-shirt says, from my act. And it's actually from my father's, for the piece from my father. It says, don't be a stupid story. Because I was one of these things. What are you doing? You're stupid, huh? You're stupid. You don't have to do your story. So that was the thing that stuck with me and it sticks with a lot of people. And it definitely helps, you know, and it's not saying, oh, it's all, you know, now it's about the money. It's not. It's just being able to further the comedy. You know, now I can travel and spread that love a little bit more. Now I can go to Arizona. I can go to New York, L.A. Like now it's not like, oh, I can only be in Florida because that's how it was before. Like I only do every once in a while. I can go up to Atlanta or,
right,
you know, but only for a few. You know, now I can go there, take a chance and, you know, make a little money and then, you know, be able to buy a plane ticket for the next round. You know,
that's all it is. That's all it is. I tell people that all the time. I say, listen, I know this is the part of the show people hate. I gotta try to sell you a t-shirt or whatever. I said, but here's the thing. I don't need you to buy this t-shirt. Some of you out there want to take a piece of the show home with you. It's like a souvenir. You know what I mean? So if you knew you weren't going to buy anything other than your drinks and food when you came here, this part of the show isn't for you, but it still has jokes. So you can enjoy it, you know, but don't think that I don't need you to buy this shirt. Do I want you to? Of course I want you to. I wouldn't have put in the effort of making it and bringing it here if I didn't want you to, but it's not something that all this does is help me get from A to B. I'm going to get from A to B, but this helps. So if you want to help me, you can buy a shirt. If you really want to help me, but you don't have any money, take a picture with me. Take a picture with me, share it on your Facebook and tag me in it. That helps me more than you know. And there's like all these different layers to like letting people help you. And it's one of those things where it's like, you don't want to beg for help, but at the same time, you know, like that merch, man, not being able to sell merch, like if you're a feature act and the headliner doesn't let you sell merch, you can literally be losing, you know, double your pay. You know what I mean? It's not like you can just march into the office like, I'm going to need a raise this week because I can't sell merch. It's like, no, that's not negotiable. You know, you're just out that money. But at the same time, it's a privilege to be able to sell it. So at this level, you know, you can't really balk at it. But I wanted to ask you this. You said you started doing comedy after your dad had died. Did you feel like you could do it now that he was dead? Did you feel like you couldn't do it while he was still alive?
Probably. It was one of those things where, I mean, he had a hold on all of us, like, super, I say strict, it's not like, hey, go to your room, it's like, almost fear, you know, like, it never hit me, but it was just such lock mentally that, you know,
I know what you mean. About respect. I know what you mean.
You know?
Yeah. And that's interesting to me. Did he have that saying, you have brothers and sisters?
Younger brother, 10 years younger.
Okay, and so he had that same impact, that same kind of like, he has the same story? Or
that was his baby, so yeah, that was his boy. Like, that was his, when he came out, that was his favorite. Plus, he was 8 years old when he passed. I was 18. Doesn't remember. He remembers him, but, you know, it's not as much. He's 8 years old, so.
That's interesting. So, what do you think the story would have gone like had you started while he was still alive? Do you think it just would have been heavy judgment or this isn't a real career? You need to do something real with your life? I mean, what's your fear? What was the fear?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, because he was all about, he was about hard work and, you know, making money and putting it in and I would have had to really, probably would have had to leave the house and, you know, do something, really rebel to get to do what I'm doing now, because I didn't feel like I had that even in my mind. You know, it was like either going to college and getting a job, you know, and it was nothing else, you know. So when he passed, it kind of like opened up a lot of things, you know, even just personally, I was able to express myself a little more and, you know, be myself and just try things, you know, because I was always, you got to be the good kid, you got to be the good one, and always, you know, I wanted to be the bad kid sometimes too, you know, I want to go have some fun. And
did you know that about yourself, though? Did you know you were being repressed? Did you feel repressed before he passed?
I think so, but I mean, until afterwards, until I felt like that release a little bit, you know, and then once I felt comedy, then it really was like, wow, like now I know what it is to express yourself and to, you know, to be alive and to, you know, let things out instead of holding everything in all the time, you know, because that stuff builds up after a while, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I think it can drive you crazy. I think some people, you see a guy who's not necessarily unfunny, but he's doing comedy maybe later in life, or a woman, they're doing comedy later in life. And what the sense I get is that sometimes you see somebody who kind of snapped before they found the stage. You know what I mean? Like, if they had found the stage sooner, they might have been able to channel that energy into something more productive. But I do feel like I found the stage at the moment of deciding whether or not I wanted to live or die. Not necessarily, like, within hours. You know what I mean? It was like, I was like, I don't really care if I live or die. And then I saw some comedy and I was like, oh, you know what? I do care, because I think I do want to try that before I would die. I think I would still want to try that. And it was still like 5 years before I did try it. But I definitely understand what you mean by, like, I got it when you were like, you didn't know how repressed you were till after it had passed and you started tasting it. It's almost like you don't know how good food tastes until you taste, you know, really good food. You know, it's like if you've been in prison your whole life,
you don't know,
like,
that you don't know.
Exactly, exactly. This triangle pizza tastes good. It's like, and then you go to New York or Chicago and have pizza, like, oh, that's different.
Oh.
I didn't even know I wasn't eating pizza. Well, that's great, man. That's a great story. And I can honestly say your father sounds sort of like me in how I father my son, in that I don't hit my son, but without, when you remove the violence, a certain level of authority has to be replaced, right? Mm-hmm. So my dad hit me, but he maybe played it cool more than he should have, because it was like, he knew he could always just hit me to correct me. You know what I mean? But it's like, when you take hitting off the table, it's almost like then, like, form becomes more important. Respect, these words and how you speak and treat people becomes more, and a look can be just as bad as a hit. You know what I mean?
Oh, the look, dude. This was him. The eyebrow. That's where I got it from, man. Bro.
Yeah.
So that, and another thing, he used to do the sideburn thing. I don't know if he would, when he would get me, he would do the sideburn. That's why I still shave these to this day. Like, bro, the sideburn is something. Oh, it's worse. I would say hitting you, like, oh, you could get through it, but this right here, it's not only just hurts you, but it's humiliating. Yeah, you do it in front of people too, and you're like, wagale, yeah, and it's like connected right to the tear duct, so you can't even, as a man, hold it in. Like, right. No, it's, you're gonna cry. You're gonna cry.
Nah, if you get sideburns. Just put my eye, when you put your hand up like that, and it makes my eye water up. Now, it's not the pain, it still hurts.
Yeah, but
that's interesting. Yeah, I can say though that, you know, everybody's got this story, this journey, this path that we're on or whatever. And especially as comics, you know, we're on a very similar path, whether we think, whether our material lines up or not with each other. We're all kind of in a drag race, not against each other, but against the clock. You know, what do you want to get accomplished before you're too old to accomplish it? And I think, this is just my sense, I'm no psychic or anything like that, but, you know, your dad passing at a point in your life when you were ready to find the stage, I mean, cosmically, it doesn't really get much better than that. I mean, it's like the stuff stories are made of. The best part of the story is that, you know, wherever he is, if he's looking at you, he's got to be proud. You know what I mean? He's got to be proud of somebody who made it, who not, because here's the thing that I see in the story that I think is so compelling. You did it your dad's way. and then you went and did it your way. You know what I mean? And that's there's not a lot of respect for that these days, because that used to be how everybody had to do it. You had to do it your parents' way. And if you were lucky, maybe you got to do something for yourself, a lot, like have a hobby. You know what I mean? But you're going to raise some kids and buy a house. You know, you're going to do it this cookie cutter way. But I don't want to say, you know, that I'm glad he passed or anything like that. But everything happens for a reason, I believe. And for that to have been what freed you up enough to get to the stage, it seems like you're up to pretty big things when you're on the stage. You're not just like a standstill comic. You know, I was like, this guy's, you know, when you're watching somebody who's really good and you're like, fuck this guy, he's going to be famous. That's the that's the feeling I had when I watched you. I was like, oh, dude, what is he doing here? He probably already got shit, you know? He's like, there's a Comedy Central special airs this Saturday, guys. Check it out. Thank you very much. It's like, oh, man, this guy's a ringer.
What are you doing here, man?
But, so I think that's a great story. And, I don't know how much of that you put into the act or whatever, but, you know, on a side note, if you ever do work on a screenplay or you write a book or whatever, that's going to be what has everyone connect, you know, because it drawed me in instantly when you start talking about that part of the story. So that's fascinating, man. And I'm glad I got to meet you and have you on the podcast. Do you have any projects coming up you'd like to plug on the show?
Right now, well, I do have a show. The title's still tentative. We're going to try to get it on Netflix, if anything. So it's going to be kind of a documentary on stand-up, but try to not be on too in the serious side, you know, maybe show a little bit of the feature side. I haven't no title for it yet, but that should be coming up. And then just shows. I got a show on iDiscovery. I play a car thief.
Oh, nice. One of
those quick America's Most Wanted type things.
Of course, yeah.
So I get arrested. I finally get to steal a car on TV, which is pretty cool.
I thought your people were into that sort of thing. I don't know.
I could never play that part. I never get like the thug. Like they put, you know, they get the stereotypical auditions you know, for the drug dealer, for the thug. I never get it, and I finally got it. I was like, you know, because I kind of went in with that attitude at the audition. Like, you know what? You don't want me.
Right? Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. They don't like my people, man. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And it went really well. So that'll be on iDiscovery in a few weeks. And
where can people find you online?
Everything is Ramon Garcia Comedy. If you put Ramon Garcia in Google, it's going to look at you like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you mean. Give me something more. You need more than just Ramon Garcia. So put comedy at the end. And still there's going to be another comedian, but he's on Univision or Telemundo or something.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't have a mustache.
All right.
So, look, there's two comedians. I think he only speaks Spanish and does this thing. But I'm the one, Ramon Garcia Comedy, that is my Facebook. The only thing that's different from Ramon Garcia Comedy, because everything else, like YouTube, Facebook, is all that, is Twitter and Snapchat, which is Ramon G Comedy.
Okay.
And I'm very much into Snapchat now because all the filters and stuff. And then I also do like a little like social narration where I'll just give a voice to people walking by and I just have fun with it. So
those are my favorite ones. Those are my favorite ones on Snapchat because I find Snapchat to be terribly lonely. For some people, like it's just them doing video selfies or they would call it vlogging or whatever. But I want to see I want to see what's on the other side of the camera, at least equally. So like when I see people that do the social comment, to me that's like having a live podcast show because you never know what you're gonna get. So that's follow Ramon on Snapchat, guys. Follow him all over social media. Watch out for him because I think we're going to see big things from this guy. Should be hitting the Funny Bone improv circuit up here, up north. Probably, I'm guessing, this fall, all the way through New Year's and probably Valentine's Day. So be on the lookout. Anything else you want to say? Anything, you got any baby mamas out there you need to acknowledge or any child support you need to...
None of that stuff.
All of us minorities, sometimes I want to give people a chance to be like, hey, if my child support probation is listening, man, I ain't got no money, man. This podcast doesn't pay, man.
I ain't sold that much merch yet, man.
That merch thing was just an idea. It was theoretical that I had. And it was, I'm still losing money on it, is what I'm saying.
No, just a lot of people just, man, keep coming to shows, and even if it's you know, a headliner show, cool, but go to these small rooms too and have some fun and support the scene, you know, because a lot of people, you know, they come up through that and they need that, you know, they need some audiences out there. And there's some pretty good shows and pretty good comedians that, you know, don't get seen because they're, you know, there's not enough room yet. But go up there, support them, get them out there. And, you know, if you can do the merch thing afterwards, you know, save that $20, take a shirt, or like you said, take a picture, help the comedians out, man, because it's not easy out there, right? It's hot out there.
He's hard, man. He's hard.
Kill them fans.
Thank you, Ramon Garcia. That was a great interview. Check him out on social media, guys. Check him out all over the web.
Whispers.